Good morning, church. Right over here, in this smaller red iron construction, represents a lot of joy and, unfortunately, some heartache. Do y'all know what this represents? People of the journey? People on a journey? Do you know what this represents? What does this represent? No, not but some. The cross. The cross of Jesus Christ and all that he promises. Do you know what each of these locks represent? What? A marriage where each partner has said, I'm all in for life regardless. There's no way what God has joined together, no one can unlock. And everybody said. Amen. So Sherry and I, our locks, Friedman right here on the very bottom, we like to say as long as we stay flat at the foot of the cross, we're going to be good. But the entire structure is designed for couples at our couples retreat to symbolically illustrate their mutual commitment, first to God through his son Jesus Christ, and then to their marriage to honor God, make him look good, and receive the blessings that come from a lifetime together. That's the joy when we see couples do this at the retreat. The heartbreak is, tragically, we've had to use bolt cutters to cut some of these off over the past many years. As commitments, one made in earnest and sincerity, for whatever reason, now are considered not able to be lived out. So this is why we do things like the couples retreat, so that we can pause long enough to reaffirm our commitment to Jesus Christ and by his grace and power, continue to live into a one-flesh relationship as a married couple. You don't have this kind of opportunity in the course of your daily, weekly, chaotic schedule. So Terrence is out there with the monitor. He's showing pictures from past retreats, and he's got actually a laptop where you can sign up immediately. I wouldn't even mind if you get up right now. But make sure you come back, because you don't want to miss this. And I've said, who has a lock there? You know what I've discovered is the bolt cutters that have excised locks. Those people not only are not married anymore, they're typically not plugged into a local body for a variety of reasons. So it all works together. All right, we're going to finish our series in just a minute, but as I promised you, I'm going to continue to expose you to current events and worldview. And I already had one loaded on Tuesday, already tested it, it was working fine. And then something caught my attention. Breaking news from Dallas, Texas, where Amber Geiger, a Dallas County Sheriff's deputy, was sentenced to 10 years for the murder of Botham Jean. Do you know the story? Amber, after a 13-hour shift working with Dallas SWAT, came home to her apartment. She thought what happened was she parked on the wrong level. You know how these complexes are all identical. And she went into what she thought was her apartment. And there was a strange man, and as he rose to approach her, she shot him 3 times in the chest with her service revolver, her service weapon, and he died. She was first put on administrative leave, then fired, tried, found guilty of murder. All of the perfect storm to feed into the fuel of our cultural hostility where we draw lines, separate each other, and just accuse each other nonstop of everything from bigotry, racial intolerance. It fuels the ongoing hatred. Except for this. Upon the guilty verdict, as happens in most, I think, I mean, I'm not a courtroom expert, but I think that the family or people impacted by the death of the one taken have a chance to speak to the one now found guilty. It's called a victim impact statement. Have you heard of it?
I don't want to say twice or for the 100th time what you've or how much you've taken from us. I think you know that. But I just, I hope you go to God with all the guilt, all the bad things you may have done in the past. Each and every one of us may have done something that we're not supposed to do. If you truly are sorry, I know I can speak for myself. I forgive you. And I know if you go to God and ask Him, He will forgive you. And I don't think anyone could say it. Again, I'm speaking for myself, not even behalf of my family. But I love you just like anyone else. And I'm not gonna say I hope you rot and die just like my brother did, but I personally want the best for you. And I wasn't gonna ever say this in front of my family or anyone, but I don't even want you to go to jail. I want the best for you. Because I know that's exactly what both of them would want you to do. And the best would be give your life to Christ. I'm not gonna say anything else. I think giving your life to Christ would be the best thing that both of them would want you to do. Again, I love you as a person. And I don't wish anything bad on you. I don't know if this is possible, but can I give her a hug, please? Please?
Yes. Thank you very much.
See that? That's not of this world. But not of the kingdoms of men. That's the fruit of the kingdom of God. The church, our mandate is to proclaim that same message in every setting. You know, it's interesting, as a follow-up, you know, I've said this before, we're just so easily bullied. We have the most potent dynamo within us, and we're so easily bullied. And we believe, because of all these sound bites of how government is aligned to squash Christianity, and how politicians of certain stripes are aligned to squash Christianity, and how a pluralistic culture or relativistic culture or a naturalistic culture is aligned to squash Christianity. The Church of Jesus Christ will not be squashed. And our message is that tender forgiveness in the space of horrible offense. That is our message. That is to be our livelihood. Judge Tammy Kemp, just a few moments after this, you saw her plate on the side of the bench, right? Judge Tammy Kemp took Amber into her quarters and gave her her personal court copy of her Bible. I believe she was motivated by Brandt's offer of the gospel. Otherworldly is our citizenship. Otherworldly is our expression. I question whether or not I should show you that on the front end of the message, because I thought it might overwhelm everything else. But if it does, go live it. That would be your application for today. It just so happens that it feeds nicely into our series wrap, this content. If we're going to do life well as parents, and if you're not a parent and you hope to be, or if you're not a parent and you don't think you are because your kids have left the house, that's totally incorrect. But if you're not a parent and you hope to be, this will be helpful. But it's really irrelevant if you're not a Christian. If you don't have the resource of that otherworldly spirit of God in you to continue to shape you and conform you to the image of Jesus. Any worldly or natural attempts at being an otherworldly human being that's nonsensical, right? Natural, otherworldly, they don't go together. And so this is a message about fruit. The fruit of God's Spirit. And it's a message that's comprehensive to all Christians. We just happen to be now packaging it in the context of family living. So away we go. Healthy families and needy children. One of our baseline statements is that we value healthy families and needy children because we're certain that God's desire is to proclaim his message from generation to generation through healthy families to their children. Two truths. So if you have your bulletin outline, just keep up. If not, make notes. You can always find this content on our website very shortly after, probably what, Monday afternoon, John? This could be helpful to you in the days to come. Intro, the fruit of a Christian family. I'm just going to throw it back to last week's message when Paul the Apostle, writing to the church he founded in Thessalonica, writing back to them, talked about in a family sense what it means to do family life well, the goal of family living as Christians. And here it is. Paul says, "You know how we lived among you for your sake." He's speaking as a parent because in chapter 2 he says, like a mother, this is how we acted. Like a father, this is how we also acted. So he's speaking as a parent to his spiritual children. Tremendous crossover application to families. You know how we lived among you for your sake. I would say that's a point in and to itself. Parents are living with their children for their children's sake. Now, we have it a bit askew when we understand what "for their sake" means. You know, often we use the same words, but we have different dictionaries. Does that make sense? So it needs to be parsed, and hopefully I'll do that a bit today, what it means to live for the sake of your children. I'm not talking about child-centered parenting. That's absolutely dangerous. Here is the goal, that our kids become imitators of us, and therefore, as we are representative of Christ, they become imitators, most importantly, of him. Is that a worthy goal for your parenting, Christian parents? So, the Christian family vineyard. I'm looking at it another way. It's the same conversation about family, and now I'm going back to John 15. John 15 is all about a vine dresser, God. Now, it's a perfect word picture for his audience. Jesus is speaking into an agrarian culture. What does agrarian mean? Farming, crops, livestock. And when he talks about a vine and a vine dresser, his audience knows exactly what he's saying. When he speaks of a branch being plugged into a vine, they are right on point. Because a vine dresser is someone who carefully prepares the main trunk of the vine so that all the branches that are plugged into that vine receive what they need in order to bear. Y'all are sharp. We're all together now. We're doing great. Let's stay with it. Jesus says, "I am the vine. I am the thing to be plugged into." He says this to his followers and to the room at large, the setting at large. "Whoever abides in me and I in him or her, he or she is it that bears much fruit, for apart from me you can do." Now that is absolutely incorrect in another context. I can do lots of things apart from Christ. I can do things that I know are great. In my own thinking, in the estimation of the world, I can do magnificent things apart from Christ. They're all a vapor. I've done magnificent things apart from Christ, and it's all been vaporized. Everything I do apart from Christ is absolutely akin to Chinese food. I think I've done something substantive and satisfying, but an hour later, I'm hungry again. And so Jesus places this conversation in its proper context. He places it in the context of what's really important, of what's really lasting, of what's necessary, of what's helpful, what's fruitful. "I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he is it that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing." Jesus is the vine. We are the branches. That word abide means to remain in. It's the Greek verb meno. It means to remain in. It means to stay attached to. It, on a contrary course, what it doesn't mean is, I come to church on Sunday. I plug into church, I unplug, and then I go do all the things that don't matter. It means that my daily diet is sourced in the vine of Jesus Christ. My daily diet of thinking, my daily diet of attitude development, my daily diet of spiritual nourishment from His Word, my daily diet of being submitted in prayer, my daily diet of being a disciple. It's remain. To remain, say it with me, remain. I absolutely can remain in Christ through all of the chaos of my day. Did you know that? It is really a habit that can be developed. And it's so settling. There's great fruit that comes from that being plugged in to remain. There's great power and potency. There's less chaos and stress. Because we're plugged into so many other vines that we feel like are going to give us healthy, nourishing substance and then good fruit. But it's all chaos and counterfeit. That's the Christian family vineyard. So let me ask you a question. How much remaining are you doing? Would you say, man, I'm coming to church all the time? I say, that's great. How much Monday, a Tuesday, a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday are you, how much remaining there? I would say that's true for probably me too. It's kind of like a... So, let's do this. I'm going to give you truth number one. Oh, sorry, I didn't give you verse 8. So this is why I'm struggling with these texts. When I came to faith, I came to faith. What that means is, a lot of y'all have stories where, like, progressively God was going, hey, come along for the ride, come along for the ride. It could be weeks, it could be months, it could be years. Not so with me. It was like, ah, you! And very shortly after that, whoop, 180, I'm so grateful for this guy. He didn't just say, hey, start coming to church. He said, man, come into this discipleship training. It was just a few months. I'm like, let's do that. Like, I'm a smorgasbord guy. I want everything. And God had given me a tremendous hunger for His Word and just like, rah, rah, I'm just eating it up. And so this gave me structure, and I started memorizing the text. So these texts are some of the first that I memorized, and I memorized them in good old King Jimmy. Now, King Jimmy is flowery, eloquent, and sometimes a little bit clunky for modern usage. So if I stumble over these, I'll just have to read them word for word so I keep up with what you're seeing. By this, my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit and so prove to me that, and so prove to be my disciples. You see, Jesus, as the vine, is interested in only one thing, and that is His Father's glory. Jesus is not a glory hound for Himself. He's always reflecting glory back to His Father. Jesus says, I don't do anything that my Father's not doing. I do only what my Father says. I'm following His instructions. So the goal of a branch being plugged into the nourishing vine of Jesus Christ is that who is glorified? Right? And then as an ancillary result, I prove that I'm plugged into the vine. I prove by this fruit bearing that Jesus is my source. That's like the whole like package of spiritual life. My desire is to glorify God, therefore I stay plugged in to Jesus Christ, and the fruit of my life cycles back and brings God glory. It's just this ongoing development of whole life spirituality, right? Which finds its primary expression in the places where we have the most intense relationships. And where would you say those are? Where? At home. Marriage, starting with marriage. Is it okay to say that y'all have an intense relationship married couples. Like, that could be like a good thing and maybe a dynamic that we want to work on a little bit. So, this is the Christian family vineyard. Truth number one, I become the fruit and reproduce the fruit of the vine I'm plugged into. Because if you've ever seen a vineyard, how many of you have been to a vineyard? How many of you have been to a vineyard and actually looked at it before you sampled everything at the front desk and actually remember what it looked like? Before you went on the tour. I love these little crackers that they give you. I don't know, I've just heard about it. So a vineyard has the main vine. It has now branches coming from the main vine and then branches coming from the branches of the main vine. Have you seen it? And at the end of the final set of branches is these huge, luscious, they're just beautiful. It's like jewelry. These little balls of delight. I don't even drink wine. I'm serious, I don't like wine. I'm glad I don't. You can drink some wine. Don't drink too much. It's another spirit. That's biblical, you know. Ephesians 5, 18 and following. You can read it for yourself. I become and reproduce the fruit of the vine I'm plugged into. So therefore, parents, whatever vine you're plugged into, if you're plugged into the vine of your accomplishment and advancement and being exalted and being the boss and your kids are seen as maybe a necessary evil or an inconvenience, then you are going to reproduce in them that same fruit. On the other hand, the joy of being plugged into Jesus Christ is knowing that the fruit of your life is reproducing in your children every opportunity for them to follow him. Now, they are responsible for their own ultimate plugging into the vine. I'm not responsible for my kids' salvation. And everybody said, I am responsible to have fruit developing in my life by being plugged into the vine so that, in order that, my kids have the best possible representation of the freedom and joy found in forgiveness and now life in Christ. Right? And that is our goal. But I become and reproduce in my kids the fruit of the vine I'm plugged into. Now sometimes that vine looks like some emotional stuff, like the anger and the impatience. And the lack of gentleness and harshness. Just the judgment. Communicate, you're not meeting my expectations. Which for me usually meant, would you please just hurry up so I can go on and do something else? Would you just go ahead and get here so I can say, that's done, check. Child one, check. Child two, on the way, but check soon, I hope. Or is it just me? Is it just me? Thank you. But it's hard. Therefore, this is me telling you what you already know. Bearing fruit. Oh, Mitch, you forgot to fill in the blank. I actually didn't. I couldn't decide what to put in here. First of all, let me show you the next blank and then come back, and then you can help me with this one, okay? So this line says, bearing fruit in a family is hard. This is the next one. Bearing fruit in a blended family is harder. That's blended. I don't think so. I'm the dad of in a blended family. I've seen the chopping. I've done the chopping. Sometimes it's on high. Sometimes it's just on a consistent low swirl. So here are the two choices. The difficult life in a blended family, I'm going to go back to blended in a minute, so just don't get too uncomfortable. And then bearing fruit in a non-blended family. But there's a better way to describe it. What is it? A biblical family. Okay? The reason I didn't put it there is that so many of us absolutely started off on the wrong foot. Well, we started off on the right foot, and now we think we might be on the wrong foot. We started with a good gate, and somewhere along the way, our gate got regated, and we're just like limping along. So, if you've been listening, then you know that a biblical family is the absolute best for developing culture, civilization, and then inside the family unit, secure, spiritually healthy kids that reproduce that same fruit in the next generation. Wouldn't you agree? Now, so many of us haven't lived it or aren't living. I never lived. That's probably too strong. My parents were divorced when I was a teenager. It was a shock to me. And so it's hard to be a teenager. Isn't it hard to be a teenager? And all the teenagers said, "That's right, why don't you preach on that for a while?" Maybe. Take me to lunch. And then when I got married, I married my wife, obviously, who has a child. And so I'm like, this will be fine. This will be good. But it turned out to be really hard. And harder on my daughter Tara than on me. Because I'm just like, this is the way it's going to be. There's a new sheriff in town. His name is your new dad. And she's like, really? And that's a 7-year-old. Really? Believe me, it just got stronger as she reached her adolescent years. Really? But by God's grace, which is required for all of our circumstances, biblical or blended, she now calls me dad joyfully. I don't even have to pay her anymore. But we have a great relationship. She's actually more like me, poor soul, than our bio children. I mean, she has now seen and experienced my branch to her branch, and she is reproducing the fruit that I produced in her. And that's mostly a good thing. And I'm so grateful for that. And so I think that's where I want to offer you hope. But you have to know what you're up against. There are some things that are so common to blended families. Well, they're common to all, but they're more common. They're accelerated in blended families. Because in a biblical family where a man who hadn't been married has no children and a woman who hasn't been married and has no children come together, we're still bringing baggage into the thing, right? We're bringing our own fruit from the thing we experienced as branches of our parents' branches and whatever vine they were plugged into. Isn't that right? And we got to give our parents some grace too, because they were, it's just a generational thing. You know, there's this vine and then there's the branches and there's another generation of branches and then there's another generation. And who knows how much of a distortion or acceleration or mutation in the wrong direction the fourth or fifth generation of branches. This is a biblical concept. And so I want to just put up some text. I found it this week or a couple weeks, I don't know, last week sometime. As kids and adults, most of us enter into blended families having suffered deep hurts from divorce, abandonment, or death of a loved one. As much healing and recovery as we may have had, we're all still deeply wounded, insecure creatures who are constantly and indirectly asking each other. Now, this is so true. This is true regardless of the blendedness that happens. This is true of every human being because we are deeply insecure. And everybody said. Now, if you say, I'm not deeply insecure, that means your pride is such a fantastic, you think, reinforcement and fortress against any penetration. That's part of the fall, part of what happened in Genesis 3. Give me a new set of fig leaves. This one, I think they're seeing through. We're still deeply wounded, insecure creatures who are constantly indirectly asking each other, do you really love me? Can I trust you? And if there's a conflict or I mess up, are you going to leave me too? This is true as the new couple are asking questions subconsciously or maybe expressly. And it's true especially in the kids that are coming to the quote-unquote party. Am I making sense so far? Unconditional love is a truth yet to be proven early in any relationship, but especially so in blended families. By its nature, love needs time to reveal its true character. Actually, that's a typo that I had cut and pasted, so it's not my fault. Okay, give me another fig leaf, quick. Can you mark that, Justin, to its? It needs no apostrophe. How many of you knew that? Thank you very much. It didn't affect the way you experienced the message, though, right? Are you sure? What's the application for today? Remove the apostrophe! Good job, boy. Quick edit. Say thanks to our fantastic team. One of our favorite reassurances to each other and to our kids is, I'm not going anywhere. That's actually a great verbal assent to our partners, especially in the midst of the most trying experiences. To turn down the heat, put the issue on the back burner, turn up the heat on the commitment on the front burner and say, hey, this is not in any way a threat to the promises we made to each other. At all. I promised God first. And believers, that's what you did. What God has joined together. Right? Meanwhile, we are playing for keeps. Even when feelings get hurt or kids reject us or things don't go anything like we planned, which is very often in every family. True? All right, so now let me finish. Good news, you can cultivate potent family fruit, but it has to be cultivated in you first. You will not produce good spiritual fruit in your kids unless you are growing as a nutrition point in your own identity as spiritual fruit, right? Galatians 5:22, it's 10:33 already. Are y'all having a good time? I just need a few more minutes. Is that all right? Okay. Galatians 5, if you notice the letter to the Galatians, Paul is really in a bad mood. His church is not acting like, I mean, they are like blended in the worst way. They don't even seem interested in spiritual fruit that's right. And so toward the end of the letter, Paul talks about the difference between being plugged in to my natural appetites and desires, the flesh as the main vine, and what it means to be plugged in to Jesus Christ and have the fruit of the Spirit. Have you heard that expression before? Have the fruit of the Spirit as the crop. The deeds of the flesh, he says, the acts of the flesh, up in verse 19, impurity and debauchery, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, discord, jealousy, fits of rage. Dude, all of this is possible in a family every day. Especially fits of rage and really easily angered people say, oh me. Anybody gulping, clenching, anything going on out there? These are in conflict with each other, Paul says, as he begins to introduce the two, so that you are not to do whatever you want. So there's a battle going on. But if you are led by the Spirit, you're not under any natural set of regulations. It's otherworldly. And then Paul says, and down in verse 22, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and come on, church. Yeah. You should memorize those nine. Because this is your daily or momentary expression of the proof that God is being glorified because you are following Jesus Christ. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness. And if I were to pick Paul's brain, which I hope to do some glorious day, I would ask Paul, Paul, did you mean self-control as the foundation for all of the other fruits to be expressed? Because that's the way I see it. If I can somehow get a lasso around my own instinct and impulses to react according to this world, I've already won most of the battle. Isn't that true? So, this is what I want to do with the last few minutes. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and come on. We're going to have a little fruit assessment. Constant vigilance is needed if I am to become and reproduce good fruit. I don't do this in a vacuum. I don't do this without friendships. I don't do this without accountability. I don't do this without vulnerability. I don't do this without being authentic, being open, taking down the fig leaf. So now, here we go. Let's do this. I've been looking forward to this, and it's so late already. The reason I look forward to it is because, as I told somebody, by the time it gets from me expressed to you, I'm already shredded. And encouraged. I'm not the guy I used to be. Hopefully today, when I look back, I say, I'm not the guy I was on October the 6th of 2019. By God's grace, as I remain plugged into the vine, everybody said. So here we go. We're just going to go over these very quickly. And you're going to have a chance to deceive yourself. Isn't that part of the Genesis 3 experience? Right? So in order to minimize that, ask your wife or husband. Now, not now. I don't want any like mayhem breaking out. I've seen the insurance commercial. I don't want any of that. Ask your kids. Talk about it amongst yourselves. If you're a single parent, then just ask your kids. But as a couple, also talk about it among yourselves and then ask your kids. Ask your adult children. I found them to be truly honest. Probably, again, fruit of being plugged into my branch. A little bit harsh sometimes. I get that from Sherry. Number one, love. Now, this is a perfect opportunity for us to say, sometimes we use the different dictionary. The culture says love is just this squishy thing where I just make sure you do what you want and I have no expectations for anything having to do with firm or truthful or sometimes hard things. This is not biblical love. Biblical love is agape, the word used here also. It means that I prefer your interests over mine. And in the context of spiritual fruit and discipleship, it means that I'm willing for your benefit to have hard conversations speaking the truth in love. But I have to move down the continuum towards your benefit and not my exercising my agenda on you. I think that's hard, don't you? So here we go. Would your family say that your goal in living with them is to serve their best interests? Meaning their discipleship, meaning the placement of guardrails, meaning serving them in the most common and maybe undesirable context, like, oh, you want me to come down and unclog, you want me to plunge a toilet again? Like, you know, you don't use a half a roll. Just a few sheets will suffice. I mean, it's along that whole spectrum. Number two, joy. Would your family say that in times of difficulty and stress, you draw on some inner settledness that can actually speak words of life and cheer and praise to God in the most trying of times? That's a good one, don't you think? And still, with joy, are you more inclined to speak words of gratitude than complaint when things get rough? Number three, peace. Would your family say that you're a model of contentment and not easily agitated? This one always gets me. Number four, patience. When the people in your family or the things in y'all's lives together are not moving as quickly as you would like, would your family say that you are able to wait gracefully without an excess of frustration? Like, okay, reservations are 7:30. That's just a simple example. Parents, this is important in the fruit of patience. Do you take the time to explain the reasons for disciplining your children and basic yes or no decisions that you made? This is so important. Kindness, number five. Would your kids and your spouse say you consistently make a point of encouraging them? Are you kind in the sense of lending a hand when you see something that could be done and you could provide some extra energy, even though it's not required of you? Meaning, are you an extra mile kind of person? Still under kindness, you give your spouse and children the benefit of the doubt? Or do you spring towards harsh accusation? Goodness, number six. Are you quick to acknowledge when you've wronged your spouse and your kids and instantaneously seek forgiveness? Sometimes I wait because I'm trying to figure out ways I could sort of parse some of that over to them. Or is that just me? There is no waiting in spiritual vitality when I know I've stepped in it. There's only keeping short accounts. I am quick to acknowledge what I've done and seek forgiveness, and I'm quick to offer it, and not even if it's requested. See, some of us think we'll offer forgiveness when whoever the offending party was comes and licks my boots. That's not a spiritual understanding. That's not a biblical understanding. Number eight, gentleness or meekness. Oh, did I say faithfulness? Oh, I missed seven. I am dependable and follow through on the things that are expected of me. Do you keep your promises? Would your spouse and children affirm that? Gentleness or meekness, number eight. I am able to remain in an honest posture of softness when handling the most difficult relational issues of family life. This is otherworldly stuff. Every one of these. And then self-control, which I think is the baseline. I am able, with the Holy Spirit's empowering, to resist sinful temptations, addictive impulses, and the bad habits in my life. See, because any of the antithesis of the other fruit, the things that are negative, like not gentle, not faithful, not patient, spring from this need for self-control. Wouldn't you agree? All right, rise up, church. I think that's the end. I don't know where to go from here. Y'all all right? It's really late. Say thank you to the, when you go pick up your kids, say thanks to the workers in there. But yeah, what do you think? I would love for you to get a hold of what I did here or research for yourself and keep it close by so that you have an opportunity for self-control by the Spirit's empowerment so you can live out a life of spiritual fruit. You are out of here.